In order to fully have community, there needs to be a commitment to each other's earthly well-being.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. This episode, we have Erica Helgen, Associate Professor of Latin American and Latinx Christianity, and Chloe Starr, Professor of Asian Christianity and Theology. They're discussing Acts chapter 4, verses 32 through 35, which is appointed for the second Sunday of Easter in year B. Here's the text. Acts chapter 4, verses 32 through 35. Now the whole group of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possessions, but everything they owned was held in common. With great power the apostles gave their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as owned lands or houses sold them, and brought the proceeds of what was sold. They laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need.
So it's impossible for me to not relate this text directly to Latin American religious history, and specifically the history of Latin American liberation theology, because this is such a central text. This idea, you know, that early Christian communities held possessions in common, shared resources, promoted radical economic equality, you know, was central to Latin American liberation theology. And historically, it was also one of the most dangerous texts, right, at the time of Latin American dictatorships in the mid and late 20th century. You could easily be accused of being a communist just from reading this text during your religious service. So for me, this is a radical text. It has direct political implications, but I wonder if you have the same response.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an inspirational text. And I think now we've often too easily accepted the hierarchies of wage distribution. At church here, for example, you hear a lot about the rich are giving higher tithes, but you rarely hear anything on equitable redistribution within congregations, for example. And I agree with you, this speaks, I mean, historically, there's been an awful lot more examples in Christian history of communal life than we might imagine. And Western commentators are often at pains to show that, you know, it's continuous verb tense. They were giving their property, so they had to still have some. And it seems at the outset to be kind of the opposite of prosperity gospel in both of our areas. And yet, you know, there's so much here about the capital that was needed for the early gospel campaign and the redistribution with the aim just that all have enough. I mean, two things strike me, first of all. One is that in the previous passage, we've heard that the believers were asking, you know, grant your servant to speak your word with all boldness, and then praying to God to perform wonders and miracles. So prior to this economic outpouring, there was this coming together in prayer, then a coming together in mind and soul. And only then they came up with the inspiration to share what they had. And, you know, you're talking about sort of parallels with other countries. I've just been writing an article on Christian nationalism in China and looking at the process of land reform by the communists in the late 1940s that so many people in the Protestant, especially the liberal wing of the church, supported. And this was a real huge redistribution by the state of wealth in the interests of workers. And liberal Christians really supported this, believed in it, affirmed that, you know, the government in its kind of salvation, liberation, was doing the same thing that the church ought to be doing. There were examples even earlier in China of Christian groups, indigenous Christian groups, living communally like this. And one famous example is Jing Dianying, who founded the Jesus family in Shandong as early as 1921. And they really did live truly communally. Food, agriculture, housing, daily prayer at 4 a.m. 500 people were living on like 48 acres of land in the 1920s. And then they began tithing their harvest, and they progressively gave more and more of it away during famine. And they, you know, the government had a problem with them because the government really didn't like the fact that they were Christians, the new communist government in 49, but they were practicing true communal ideals. And they had no foreign support, and yet still the government cracked down on them in 1952 and disbanded the communities and tore down their HQ. But this is a real world live example of Christians, you know, putting this text foremost in their lives and actually sharing their food and living together.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think sometimes today people read this and they think, well, you know, that was done back then, or, you know, this is something to be strived for, but it's not practical. And the interesting thing is, historically, this was seen as a very practical sort of guide to how Christians should be living. You talk about land reform in China, and Latin America also had a huge, you know, political movement of land reform throughout the 20th century. And the Catholic Church, for one, was, you know, by the 1960s and 1970s, a huge supporter of land reform movements, specifically saying this is, you know, what the Bible tells us to do, is that those who have more land should sell that land and give it to the needy. And, you know, I also look at this text and I think, you know, again, this is the core thing here, is there was not a needy person among them. You know, if you have a group who are of one heart and one soul, if you, you know, in order to fully have community, to be a community, there needs to be a commitment to each other's earthly material well-being. You know, that material well-being, the idea that no one should be needy, was central to the creation of community.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And the sharing of property in this way is, as you say in the text, it's consistent with the Greek ideal of friendship, this sort of friendship, you know, where you see the need and you quietly address it. You're not creating a debt bond, but where both of you are really thankful at the outcome, this one soul all in common. These are all Greek proverbs relating to friendship and this kind of Greek grace-empowered generosity. It always interests me, the sort of different cultural expectations of friendship and, you know, sort of friends who would do for you what you want to do for yourself. And it reminds us of Jesus laying his life down for his friends. And then the real contrast in the next passage between Ananias and Barnabas. Barnabas is who's really, you know, he's given held up as this example, not as a model, but just as an example of an individual who had a property, sold it, and gave the proceeds to others. So this, as you say, this redistribution is the all have enough, and that this brings together the community in a new way, and it really created the church. And it's not that they carry on doing exactly the same thing elsewhere. We know that Paul in Acts, you know, other communities like the Antioch church took a collection. It's not that they all sold their property at that point. And we know other examples later on in the Pauline letters of women and others who still had property. So they weren't, you know, this is not the Qumran community where you had to give your property away in order to belong to the community. It's that the experience of believing and being in community encouraged you out of love to give what you had spare and, you know, possibly to live on so that all could live okay.
Yeah, this idea, you know, no one should be needy. And again, this radical project, right? Like there is this idea that, you know, this community from the beginning has a radical project of, in order for all to be as one, we need to ensure that everyone is without need, that everyone has their material well-being taken care of.
Yeah, and it's radical, but it's also ordered. So the money is brought and laid at the feet of the apostle. And this apostle's important point here is, you know, that they recognize the leadership, that it's not done in a kind of patronage me to you type of way, but it's brought together in an ordered way, showing the authority of the apostles and then distributed by the church as others have need.
Thanks for listening. We're so glad you're here. We're here every week with new episodes to help you shape your preaching, teaching, and reflection. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aidan Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer, Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.